I would like to introduce is Reverend Dr. Michael Pryor. He is a priest and academic from St. Mary's College, University of Surrey. Michael Pryor, please come in.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I've been asked to say a few words about the problem that the Israeli-Palestinian conflict poses to the Christian churches. So I'll talk about that for a few minutes. The explosive issue of Israel-Palestine is one of the greatest international crises as we know, but it's also one that poses very fundamental questions to religious people and to the churches here. It raises all sorts of questions about the values of the biblical narrative, for example, and the values of the different interpretations of the Bible. And the Holy Land is a place that has a great affection in the minds of Christians throughout the world, but of course primarily in the minds of the Christians of the Holy Land themselves. They have never been very appreciative of the Zionist enterprise. In 1948, about 50,000 Palestinians were expelled, along with the other 750,000 who were expelled from what became the territory of the State of Israel. And since that time, those remaining Christians in Israel live as unequal citizens, or else in the West Bank and the occupied territories, they live under occupation. And whether one is living in a wooden cage or in a golden cage, a cage is a cage. But Christians outside also have considerable interests, and they fall into a number of different categories. I want to talk about the first category that has the ear of George W. Bush. The most vociferous are those so-called fundamentalist evangelical Zionist Christians. Although they're not very numerous, they're not nearly as numerous as the mainstream Christians, they are ideologically very alert and very committed, and they are very influential, not least in the policy making in the United States. As far as they're concerned, what happened in 1948 and since are part of God's intentions that the children of Israel be gathered to Jerusalem and the surrounding areas. It will, in their estimation, speed up the second coming of Christ. Now, rather than concentrate on the first coming of Christ and on his exhortations to feed the hungry, heal the lame, give sight to the blind, clothe the naked, free the prisoners, and so on, they are waiting rather for the second coming, and meanwhile they support a regime that specializes in making the poor poorer, in making those with perfect sight blind, and in making the walking lame. That Palestine was already occupied by Arabs who would have to be driven out to fulfill the ethnic cleansing intentions of political Zionism is no cause for moral concern from these people. Why? Because of the way they interpret particular traditions of the Bible. However, their interpretation is not only naive, but is fundamentally immoral. Because the God of those particular traditions is the great ethnic cleanser, a militaristic and xenophobic genocidist who is not sufficiently moral even to conform to the requirements of the Fourth Geneva Convention or the various human rights protocols which attempt to set limits to human barbarism. The grotesque views of these people embracing an essentially ethnic cleansing enterprise as a fulfillment of biblical prophecy and clothing political Zionism in the garment of piety would not warrant serious attention were it not for the influence that they have on the foreign and domestic policies of the United States. However, neither has the performance of the mainstream churches been a model of ethical engagement. It is one of the anomalies of recent church history that while Christians have supported oppressed peoples virtually everywhere else, there has been relatively little protest against the historic injustice perpetrated on the indigenous people of Palestine by political Zionism, a movement thoroughly at home in the colonial spirit of 19th century Europe. Many Christians, of course, are sympathetic to the ideal of a state for Jews as compensation for the litany of European persecution of Jews. That it is others who have to pay the price is all the better. Even when faced with compelling evidence about the damage done to the Palestinians, these people remain somewhat detached. They really can't bring themselves to face into the dark side of political Zionism, and in any case, taking a stand for Palestinian rights is not likely to help one's promotion prospects either in the church or in the universities. I'm almost there. Now, there are, of course, many Christians who approach the question of Palestine from a human rights perspective. They acknowledge the fundamental injustice done in 1948 and the atrocities associated with the State of Israel. But such people are not in positions of power within the churches. The most the leaders of the churches, by and large, appear able to bring themselves to is to subscribe to what I call the fallacy of balance. The conscience of the Christian church leadership is virtually paralyzed by guilt, mostly about what was done to Jews in Europe in the past, for which they themselves are hardly responsible. Such is their guilt also that they leave unchallenged a Zionist reading of Jewish history and of recent events in Palestine. There is, for example, no serious critique of political Zionism, as there has been of apartheid, for example. And to add to the church's neglect, the evidence is now abundant that the damage done to the indigenous population of Palestine was neither accidental nor due to the unique pressures of war, but was at the heart of the Zionist enterprise from the beginning. Yet, the churches reflect little attitude to pursue these issues of justice and respect for historical truth. For a start, the leadership of the Christian churches should be prepared to insist that Israel come clean on its seminal injustice against the Palestinian Arabs and apologize for it, undo the damage it has perpetrated insofar as that is possible, honor its obligations with respect to the Palestinian right of return, make appropriate compensation for the damage done, and on the basis of confession and restitution, move towards a less exclusivist arrangement. Such exhortations would flow effortlessly from principles of Christian morality and would be in conformity with elementary justice. What we get instead from the Christian leadership is the embrace of whatever proposal, the Oslo Accords, the roadmap, however jaded and however lacking in principles of justice, the asymmetric parties to the dispute contrive, as though the Christian church were content to act on the novel moral principle that the rights of the perpetrators of injustice and its victims are finely balanced. Thank you.